Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
He wanted to put his name on it. Welcome to Food for Thought, a podcast gabfest where in a multiracial mix of queer writers gather around the table to talk about sex, identity, culture, what we like to read, and who we like to read. Food for Thought. Our cakes are so moist, they'll never go stale.
Oh my God.
True, though.
Jesus.
Where
Jesus.
Is the line?
I'm Tommy Teebs Pico. I'm an indigenous American poet, editor, and I'm in an elevator to the top. Ha, see you later. I'm gone. Penthouse Suites, bitch.
And I'm Fran. I'm a writer, editor, and you're so vain. You probably think this podcast is about you. And you know what? It really it is.
This podcast is definitely about you. I am Joseph Osmondson. I'm a scientist, nonfiction writer. My gender is tube socks, and my sexuality is jock straps.
Tube socks are so hot, though.
I kind of feel like
born in the right context.
This is not your tube of your tube socks.
True. Oh my God. Okay, you guys. And I'm Dennis Norris II, and I'm a reader, writer, a former figure skater, and Adam Rippon's clandestine butt pad.
Oh no.
Adhered.
I'll allow it.
Fran, tell us what we got on the menu this week.
This week, we're reading Thought Off the Presses. If you thought that Joe had a max capacity for emotions, you thought wrong. He's going to give us even more. For the thought process, we drag our exes for a full 30 minutes. We just, like, go. We just, like, go and don't look back. Like, fucking
full
Thelma and Louise,
ahead.
That shit, you know? And we just kind of skate right into dessert with literally the gayest thing you've ever seen. Like, if you thought this podcast was gay, we're going to out-gay it.
That's our challenge every week. Take it away.
Nom, 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 thoughts. Let's start the top of the show the way any good top should, with a little tease, our uproarious appetizer segment, Amuse Boosh. And to amuse your booshes this week, we're debuting a segment called Thought Off the Presses, where we share interesting, perhaps salacious, but always tasty stories from the news. Who wants to go first?
I'll start. Yeah, we usually record these episodes so far in advance that they have to be evergreen, but this time we're going to be releasing this week, so we get to talk about stuff that's super timely. Maybe too obvious, but the presidential portraits of Barack Obama and Michelle Obama have been revealed.
So gorgeous.
They were so beautiful. The artists were Kehinde Wiley and Amy Sherald. It's the first time an African-American has ever painted the presidential portraits for the National Gallery. But aside from that, it's the first time that these portraits have ever had any kind of point of view. Like, Barack Obama is surrounded by leaves, and then I have this, that there are chrysanthemums for the state flower of Chicago, where he got his political start, jasmine for his start, where he was born in Hawaii, and then African blue lilies for his heritage in Kenya. It's a really gorgeous portrait. It's, like, very fantastical, and Kehinde Wiley is queer. Yeah. So there is a kind of a queerness of the way it's looked at. And then Amy Sherald is, like, an amazing woman in and of herself, like a literal survivor from Baltimore. Like, both of these painters' stories are, like, truly the American dream, like nothing to, like, everything. And Amy Sherald has Michelle Obama in a Millie dress that's super couturial. It's super gorgeous, very, very, like, astute, and, like, represents Michelle so well, and how there's never been a president like her. And I feel, and, like,
we wish she had been president for
there. No, a president's a flotus. You know what I mean?
She's the president.
She was the president of my heart.
Yep. Yeah. She is the president, Joe. How dare you? Stop fucking telling me what to do. But yeah, I think there was something really beautiful about the way these paintings kind of subverted really tired-ass, old-ass patriarchal structures. Yeah. And when they had announced the artists, I was so worried that they were going to be constrained or that they were not going to be able to really show what they could do as artists, and like was not disappointed in the smallest bit. They show such progress, such future. It was exactly what the presidential portraits should be.
When you're just like epic people making epic work.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. What I loved is that they all stuck to their signature. Like the two artists stuck to their signature. Yes. It's like her signature is gray skin tone. So she paints all folk. She paints in gray tone.
And then it like locks the focus on it.
And then pastel backgrounds. And then my God, that dress. And the way the dress sort of framed her as like an almost a piece of architecture or a piece of landscape. And she's sort of sitting at the top, almost like a motherfucking deity, which we know she is. Like, I actually was so drawn to the portrait of Michelle even more than Barack. It was so stunning.
I actually 100% agree. And I felt like I love the Kehinde Wiley portrait. I love his work in general. It was quintessential Wiley, that painting. It was absolutely beautiful. And one of the things he talked about, which is part of what I loved about this whole decision, is that he said, the whole conversation of my work has to do with power and who has it. And you can see that in the depiction of Barack Obama, in the way that he's sitting, in the way that he's staring into, I guess, at the viewer. Even in someone commented in my social media, which I didn't notice until they said it, but even in the size of his hands, which I thought maybe that's a little bit of a dig.
Lol.
But also in the Sherald work with Michelle, the specific reason why she does paint her subjects in gray, which is to extract them from race and from that whole issue. And not as an issue so much, but just as a narrative element. And I thought that was a really incredible context and theory behind her work. The painting is really sort of light and airy and powerful at the same time, and there's a way in which I think that personifies Michelle's presence in the White House. But the whole thing, like, they were intentional about making their portraits political, and that's why they chose the artists that they chose, and I think that was completely radical and revolutionary.
What about you, Joe?
I have two. One is really, really short. It is a Facebook post made by our good friend and zaddy of the show, Alexander Chi.
Yes. It was so good.
Literally, the thesis of the Facebook post is don't write without getting paid for it. And I think this is you can extend this to all creative production. Don't make music. Don't make websites. Get paid for your work. And he makes a bunch of reasons. And reason number one, he says, is, quote, it is part of my activism as a writer to ask for money. Doing labor, ask for that labor to be paid for. And number four, my experience thus far is that if I give writing away, people don't respect it, right? So there's actually this feeling he basically is talking about when people ask him to do things as a favor, then they 2 years later, when their shit is when their shit is doing really good, they don't return that favor. They forget all too quickly about the things you do for them, seemingly out of generosity. So get paid for your shit, y'all.
It's respect for what we do is labor too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So that's my one quick, like, evangelizing via Alexander
Chi. And we can put it in the newsletter.
And the other one is very quick also, but so delicious. Cardi B at New York Fashion Week.
Oh, my God.
Sitting next to Anta Wintour. Mother, there's five photos. You see, I think literally for the first time in my life, I saw Anna Wintour's teeth. She actually, and I can't tell. I honestly, God, can't tell if it's a grimace or a smile. Just with her, you can't.
Knowing Anna, it's both.
But like, Cardi has the most fabulous nails that I've ever seen her with, which is
continually.
Which is continually.
She just gets better and better.
She could literally kill someone.
The photo, you guys.
It's amazing. Alexander Wang, oh my God. You know what? You're an asshole, but like, props to you. Absolutely props to you for sitting Anna next to Cardi. Genius.
That was our proof that Anna is in fact human. I feel like
I'm not
100% deity.
I'm not sure. I'm actually. I think deity or devil, Dennis.
I think she probably vacillates between the two.
Cardi B is a deity to me. For sure.
Absolutely. And even some kind of like singularity robot. You know what I mean?
that's how I completely.
I don't think she could pass the Turing test.
I'm pretty sure if you ever were to touch her, she would just turn into like green holographic ones and zeros. You know what I mean?
Honestly, same. Literally, like, that's like what people say to me after we go on dates.
Fran
like,
hugged me earlier and turned into a mist. There was no there there.
Well, speaking, since we're on the topic of New York Fashion Week, this is Teebs. What I wanted to bring up was Christian Siriano's celebration of having 10 years in the game with this 72 look exhibition. I guess I would call it extravaganza in New York Fashion
extravaganza.
Week. And he had people like Danielle Brooks walking for him, people like Cardi B in the front row. And it was lauded for its inclusivity of different shapes and sizes of different models and different skin colors and tones and all that. And like, you know, Christian Siriano came across my purview the same way he probably came across everyone's,
Project
which was
Runway.
By winning Project Runway in like 2007.
Was that 10 years ago?
In a really fucked 11 up, years ago.
Really fucked up way. I mean, like, oh, was a really fucked up person on that show.
He was.
I mean, he was, but the thing is, when he kind of, I knew about him. Yeah, I knew about him, but he didn't actually come across my radar really until like last year, I think, when he dressed Leslie Jones for the red carpet for the premiere of Ghostbusters, when literally no one else would. And I was like, all right, I see you. But I didn't actually really, I mean, and I thought that was a great gesture, but I read this interview with him in The Cut that I actually started to respect him, right? And he was talking, I think it was like around the time that his show came out this week, and he was talking about how, like, you know, this is what I divined anyway, that he doesn't know that he can ever actually accomplish anything, but he's always willing to try. And trying is so fucking important because, like, that's how you learn things, right?
Not to mention, like, when people ask him about it in interviews, because now every single interviewer will be like, oh my God, such diverse bodies, this is amazing. At this point, he just kind of shrugs it off. He's just like, why even ask me this?
Yeah.
And like, everyone should be doing this.
He doesn't, I don't understand why people don't revel in it. Like, that's not the point. Like, he's there for the challenge of the garment. And he's there for making clothes for people. He's like, if women aren't buying clothes, I'm not going to sell anything. So women have to buy my clothes, or I'll make it for different kinds of women.
And it also goes to show that people can grow. Like, he got famous from using the T-slur over and over and over again on the show. And it was literally his catchphrase. Mm-hmm. That's so fucked up. And he was so uneducated. Now he can like look back on that like with disdain and like saying sorry. But the fact that he can come so far is amazing.
Isn't that incredible when you can watch someone grow into a better version of themselves? Like artistically, politically, in the public eye, we give people space to grow. And then look, occasionally people motherfucking do it.
Yeah. As a final little flourish on that show, I watched the finale. I don't know if the song was playing throughout the entirety of it, but Dreams by the Cranberries was playing, which I later realized was Christian Siriano's boyfriend Brad Walsh covering it. But still, like, hearing that song, I got really emotional because I still haven't really dealt with Dolores O'Riordan's death.
Yeah.
Like, she died, the lead singer of the Cranberries died last month while we were all in LA, actually, and stuff has been popping off since then, and I haven't really dealt with it, but that band meant a whole lot to me.
Teebs and I were away all weekend, and he literally spent hours singing the Cranberries upstairs while I listened from downstairs. It was, I felt it in you. I felt this in your spirit.
I mean, and because the Cranberries, well, my mother would listen to the Cranberries a lot when she was, and my dad were divorcing. And we had turned our garage into an art studio so she could paint and do sculptures in there. And so I just remember her, my memory of the Cranberries anyways, her listening to them very, very loudly, me on the other side of her closed door just crying.
Oh, God.
And so I sort of saw the show as both a celebration of his 10 years in the game, but also like a remembrance of Dolores.
Oh, my God. And also just a little side note, like there are tons of other designers out there that are also using like amazing, fantastic, diverse bodies and people of color. There's like Telfar, there's Chromat, there's Gypsy Sport, there's Palomo, that is like constantly fucking with gender, constantly fucking with like the industry standard of like what a model should be, and y'all should go stalk them because Christian Siriano is great as well. But like, these are all amazing brands that are really upping the game and resetting the standard.
What do you got, Dennis?
God, oh my God. There's so much happening in the world right now, and I'm excited about all of it. First of all, not to bring back the Obamas, but I'm going to bring back Barack Obama because people know that there was a photo that turned out to be fake.
I knew it was fake. I knew it was fake, Joe.
Much to my
I knew it was
heartbreak.
Oh my God.
A photo that turned out to be fake of Barack Obama with facial hair. And
like salt and pepper facial
like
hair.
It was beautiful good. Salt and pepper. Very on brand for George Clooney, honestly. Salt and pepper facial hair kind of way. And I'm not going to lie, I arched my back when I saw the picture. And apparently, all of Twitter did too, because they were all about it.
It was like a disturbance in my force. I could feel Twitter.
Everyone knew. It just went everywhere. Listen, whenever Barack Obama gets finer, it's a disturbance in everybody's force. If not, they pants. A couple of tweets that I love, bro. Why is Barack Obama out here looking like a whole snack with the beard? I was not prepared.
A whole snack.
So true. And I'm making a personal choice of refusing to believe you that it's fake. The beard is real, and it's on Obama's face as we speak, and you'll never take that alternative fact away from me. And there was one more that I loved.
It's like Schrodinger's beard. It exists and doesn't exist at the same time.
There was one more that I loved that was just like, I'm still a lesbian, .. aren't I?
I was like, yes. Alex, our lesbian producer in the corner, spit out her rosé.
Because it's real. And the second thing is, it is the Olympics. We have lots of Olympic-themed things to talk about. And I'm just going to bring us back to the figure skating world for a minute and talk about my girl, one of my favorites, motherfucking Mirai Nagasu.
Yep.
The backstory on Mirai Nagasu is that she made the Olympic team in 2010 when she was 16 and shocked pretty much everyone in the skating world by finishing fourth at those games. She skated flawlessly, and then she proceeded to have a career that had a lot of turmoil and a lot of trouble. She came really close to making the Olympic team in 2014, but a lot of people know there was some controversy because she finished third at Nationals, Ashley Wagner finished fourth, and U.S. Figure Skating named Ashley Wagner over Mirai Nagasu. Mm. Mirai has been working her ass off for the last 4 years. She made the Olympic team this year, and she completed a clean, beautiful, flawless triple axel in her free skate in the team competition. Have you guys seen the video?
I saw the video.
It was so good.
And I had just watched this video on CNN or somewhere that was like, why can't anyone do the triple axel? And it was like all about Nancy Kerrigan? Or not about
Tonya Harding. Tonya Harding. So this is how epic this is. Like, all of the triples are called triples because you have to do three rotations in the air. And with a triple axel, you take off going forward on the ice, and so you have to do an extra half rotation. Mm. So it's very difficult for a skater to get their single axel. It's very difficult for a skater to get their double axel. And obviously, it's really difficult for female skaters to get a triple axel. And so Mirai, when she landed it, it was the second time she's landed it cleanly in competition. And she became only the third woman in history to do a triple axel in the Olympics. And she became the third American woman ever to do a triple axel, ever, anywhere. And she became the first American woman to do a triple axel in the Olympics.
Wow.
And so she made history. She's going down in history books. She is inarguably now one of the greats. And I'm so happy for her because this girl has worked so hard. Right. Come on our show. Engage in our faggotry. We know that you're best friends with Adam Rippon.
Yep.
We know that 4 years ago when you both didn't make the Olympic team, you were sitting on a roof eating In-N-Out Burger while the Olympics were happening.
Is that really what happened?
They have talked about it. They have talked about this.
Oh my God.
So please come on our show and celebrate your amazingness with us. We love you.
You.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hey, babes. For our next segment, we're going to School of Thought, it's spelled T-H-O-T, by doing a little reading of Inside Out by a little-known thought named Joseph Osmondson.
I don't know her.
I've never met her in my life. No. I don't know who you're talking about. This work has been described as a heartbreaking work of staggering penis.
That will never not be funny.
It's a series of numbered vignettes reminiscent of Bluets by Maggie Nelson that, amongst other things, depicts a romantic relationship in the midst of conflict, right? Mm. Full disclosure, we recorded an episode full of us discussing this at Housing Works. It was a live episode. The recording didn't end up getting actually recorded, but we thought it would be a good exercise to fold this into our discussion about exes with a book about exes.
Really, literally.
From the world's cryingest writer, Joe.
Hi.
The world's cryingest. Wow. But where
New
is
Twitter
the lie?
Bio. New
That's
Twitter bio.
Really good.
New Twitter bio.
That should be your Twitter bio. The cryingest.
So we're going to start with a little reading from Joe, and then we're going to read Joe.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait. Teebs, do you want to take it away with the epigraph?
Upside down, boy, you turned me inside out and round and round.
Oh, my God. Sorry. I'm just stabilized.
3. He was everything to me. A million things I couldn't turn away from. He was the type of man I never imagined myself with. Beautiful, charming, easy, tall, stylish. He taught me that being beautiful is also a burden.
His beauty preceded him in every interaction he would have, and we all wanted to consume it, and therefore him. I always saw him as more than that, which is why he loved me, and why he kept me outside. I was everything he had waited for. I was dangerous. I was his salvation. How terrifying. His beauty left me chasing him. It left me always outside, knocking on a door that only occasionally opened. A door he alone controlled. What freedom to have no control, to simply wait. Yes, the times he let me inside were ecstatic, but mostly I was outside, as I had always been. 11. He had grace. And what is grace if not control over our bodies? I never had that, but he had learned it in movement, in conversation, in sex. So, he taught me how to douche. You're allowed to laugh, thoughts. I had never cared enough before to find out what worked for my body. I had used a brand that had made me clean, but wet. Too wet. He liked a clean bottom every time, so I learned, and his brand worked best for me too. I would bike to his place. I was too poor to take the train. Douche, shower, and then I would be ready. But he started to complain. Why couldn't I come over ready? We were standing in the hallway between his bedroom and the bathroom he shared with his two roommates, who were also pretty gay boys. Because I have to bike, babe, and I get sweaty, and I need to get ready, and it's just easiest if I do it here. What I meant, I'm not graceful, and my body melts and sweats, and if you want me clean, and I know you want me clean, then I need some time. What I meant, I'm your boyfriend, and you love me, and I love you, and that means you don't just get to fuck me. You don't just get that version of my body. You get the before and the after. And I don't understand, and I will never understand, not really, why that isn't the best part of this thing we're doing. What he said. Fine. He didn't like to see the process. He was used to hookups by then. Boys who show up ready, fuck, then leave. He liked them showing up ready. And he liked them leaving. That's fine, babe, but I'm your boyfriend, and I have a body, and it sweats, I sweat, when I bike, and I don't have much grace, but I'm learning. And just give me 20 minutes, and then my body and I will be ready for yours, okay? Okay, babe? Fine. 14. Redacted.
Well, all right, then.
25. He taught me to moisturize my face so that I would always stay young or as much as possible. 66. I worry that it isn't really too late, that I might still go back to him and to all this. So I list the things he did to me and the things I did to him, and the list is long. I burn it and start again. Burn, start again. 75. He told me once, when we were breaking, that he can do bad all by himself. Sex parties, threesomes, boys, boys, boys. That cuts to the heart of it, doesn't it? As much as he used his power to control me, I knew that the end was coming, but I couldn't let go. I couldn't let go partly because I wanted him, and partly because the idea of someone else having him and his sex made me crazy. I wanted to control his bad in order to make it my own. That's not love. I can do bad all on my own. Yes, my love, you can. And so can I. I can do bad. I can do good. I'm sure I'll do both, but on my own for now. On my own, or at least without you. Outside your world, finally principled.
This message comes from iHeartRadio sponsor, Mercury Insurance. If you're looking to save some money, you should really think about getting a quote from Mercury. Because Californians save an average of $677 with Mercury. It's quick and easy, and in just a few minutes, you might find you could save a lot of money on your auto and home insurance. Plus, Mercury was named one of America's best insurance companies by Insure.com 4 years in a row. Low rates, big discounts, great insurance. Go to MercuryInsurance.com today to get a quote.
It's crazy how much we have to pay for outdated, impersonal healthcare, and even crazier that we all just accept it. It's time to face facts. Healthcare is backwards. Luckily, there's Forward, a new approach to primary care that's surprisingly personal and refreshingly straightforward. Forward never makes you feel like just another patient. Backed by top-rated doctors and the latest tech, Forward gives you access to personalized care whenever you need it. Using in-depth genetic analysis and real-time blood work, Forward's top-rated doctors provide you with in-depth insights to better understand your genetics, mental, and physical health. They then create custom, easy-to-understand plans to help guide you to achieving long-term health. With Forward, you get unlimited in-person visits with your doctor and access to care anytime via the Forward app, all for one flat monthly fee. It's time to stop accepting backwards healthcare and start moving your health forward. Visit GoForward.com today to learn more. That's GoForward.com.
I'm Whitney Dow, co-host of Reparations The Big Payback. On this season, Erica Alexander and I explore the arguments for and against reparations for Black Americans.
Everything that has touched us in a way that profited from us and we did not owes us.
The attitude that most non-Blacks would take. They're being shaken down for something that's not their fault.
All episodes of Reparations The Big Payback are available now. Listen on the Black Effect Podcast Network, the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
Here Comes the Break is the groundbreaking podcast sparking real conversations about creativity, mental health, friendship, family, hope, and music. Asante Black stars as Ruben in a fictional narrative featuring real interviews with emerging artists.
What advice would you give the families and parents about supporting a teenager that wants to pursue the arts?
If you see they're dedicated and you see that they really mean it and their grades are good, then let them do it, man. Let them do it.
Get inside Ruben's head to learn what drives him.
See, no one wants to be a Hollywood celebrity anymore. No one my age, anyway. I mean, we want to be internet famous. We want to be influencers motivating our peers to become followers of what's trending on Twitter, TikTok, or Instagram.
And find out if Ruben can survive internet fame.
No. Marco was right. No need to psych myself out. There is no turning back now.
Listen to Here Comes the Break starting May 13th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snap.
Thank
snap,
you, Joe.
Yeah.
Okay. So the burning question for us and the burning question for everyone at home is, what brand of lube was it? What lube, Joe? We have to know. The people are demanding to know.
And these are all of our favorites, so we need to know.
And what douche?
Yeah. Oh, yes. What douche? What the douche is the Fleet liquid glycerin, the little one. That's very important. Because I used the big Fleet before. The saline douche and
you
the saline
handle
douche.
The big Fleet, is that what you're saying?
I could not handle the big Fleet, but the big Fleet made handling the big dick much more difficult. So the little Fleet, it's the little liquid glycerin Fleet. And also
little liquid glycerin Fleet, so every week is Fleet Week.
Little liquid glycerin Fleet is my drag name.
The other question that I have is, like, so, you know, this is obviously like a flawed and bad relationship or whatever, but he literally said, "I can do bad all by myself," when you didn't just dump him then for being corny?
if I had to dump this person every time they were corny, it would have lasted about 37 minutes in the relationship.
Literally. That's pretty. I'm actually a little surprised at you.
I'm a little surprised at myself.
Christian weepies! When it comes to relationships and you.
There's nothing about. I feel like there is nothing about this book that surprised me in terms of like things that I already knew about you,
right.
Not in your value as a writer, like or how you write, just in that I already know you as a person. So I wonder what someone else's experience was in reading this if they don't know you at all.
It was the same because they follow him on Twitter.
Oh my God. I mean, I do think that that's one thing I try to do in my work is that I try, like, Teebs and I talk about persona all the time, and we're going to have a show soon on that, because I think the notion of building up a writerly identity that's somewhat different from your identity IRL is a really healthy thing for writers to do. But I'm like, in my work, almost incapable of that. So my writing, I find, is at its best when it really is when it's closest to my soul as possible. As I'm going to break up with myself for being corny, because that was really corny, but like, it is...
You said soul. You literally sat there and said soul,
I'm so sorry, everybody.
How dare you?
No, but I think that, like, I view craft as an ability to actually get to know my own self and my own thoughts, and then as to get the work on the page as close to that as possible.
Well, speaking about craft, then, why did you choose to do vignettes?
It's really hard to depict a relationship with any sense of reality, because relationships happen in sort of discrete moments. Like, when we remember a relationship, we remember, like, the moment we met and the moment we kissed, and then this time fucking, and then this time at an art museum or whatever.
Well, it reminded me of a tide.
Yeah,
you know, like absolutely. Something that sucks you back in. Well, and that way it wasn't, I mean, it retains a narrative quality without having like a three-act structure.
But that's how abuse feels as well, right? Because abuse feels like you are always being, you are like the tide going out. And then as soon as you're about to be the water freed, the thing knows that you're about to leave and it pulls you back in. So that sort of sense of going and coming and coming and going, it very much feels like, to me, what an emotionally abusive relationship felt like.
Well, and Yeah, was that like intentional for you on a craft level? Because that was one of the things that was most powerful to me in the book as well. I felt similarly that there are ways in which it felt like the reader was being abused. I mean, that might be a strong term, but in terms of the way that you do that, it seems
reader,
to
you're
model
like,
the action.
Don't do this.
Yeah,
right. You know what I mean? Like, it's like a horror movie. We're like, don't go in that room. And the person goes in
the room. And
the person
goes in that room. No, and even just then, the way that you hold back, because there's like, you're not explicit about everything in the book.
Yeah.
And because it is written in such short bursts, you'll get these moments of intensity and then it's like silence and then a redacted moment.
Yeah.
And then you get another short, intense burst. And it's sort of like, it is very much like a tide, like Teeps was saying.
It wasn't, so I never, like, we chatted about this off mic, Dennis. It was never actually intentional, that idea of holding abuse or control or power over the reader of the book. But what I said to you then, and I do think that you actually helped me understand this about the narrative itself, is that coming out of an emotionally abusive relationship, it was really important for me to be able to control the narrative. Because one thing that happened with me in this partnership was that my partner was trying to, like, he would do things like cheat on me or treat me like trash. And then I would even tell that to my friends, just to talk through what was happening in my relationship. And he would be like, oh, you're trying to turn your friends against me. Or, you know, he tried to control essentially how I talked about our relationship.
And you're like, no, baby, you're doing bad all by yourself.
You're doing bad all by yourself. But like, I kind of was sucked into that. And so when we broke, when I finally decided to break from this, it was incredibly important for me to write a narrative without caring about his feelings and actually to be able to control the narrative myself, which is why I understand why a reader could feel that way, because I'm being so intentional and I'm saying, nah, like, this is my book and you're along for the ride. You can see into it, but like, this is my narrative to tell. And that was what was healing for me in the writing of this. But like, that is also how abusive relationships operate, right?
And on that note, Joe, like, fuck any ex, fuck any person that like, has a problem with like you putting this narrative out. Ugh. Like, there's so many problems with your ex being like, you wrote a mean story about me. Oh my God. It's just like, it doesn't make any fucking sense. We've talked about this on the show before, but like, if you have a problem with people critiquing you on the air, if you have a problem with people saying, oh, this is the thing that they did, you have a problem with living.
Mm-hmm.
To be subjected to people's criticism.
The thing is that this person had a problem with living. I mean, that was really the problem, is that like, if I mean, and this taught me something, that if you date someone where you say something that they did that hurt you and they melt down, or if you say something that like, hey, when you do this, it makes me feel not great, and the person punishes you for making them see that in themselves, like, that's a sign to stay the fuck away from that person.
What is a problem with living if not a problem being seen?
Yes, exactly, right?
That's
and like, I think that's the thing, is that like, and for him, I was that mirror that he both couldn't walk away from and couldn't face, right? This person loved me deeply, and I don't doubt that at all. And this person was reckoning with things he didn't like in himself, and I don't doubt that at all. And so the fact that he was sort of punching and counterpunching, then pulling me back in, like, all of that makes so much sense, because he hated seeing his actions in the mirror of my love, right? And so, absolutely. Like,
and speaking of mirrors, how did you feel about Justin Timberlake's Super Bowl performance? Just kidding. No.
Oh, my God.
But another thing about, like, mirrors in relationships is also the potential for what you're seeing back. You know, have you ever seen one of those mirrors that's, like, it's, like, they're super intense and you see, like, every single fucking pore in your face?
Zoom-in mirror.
The one that flips around in the vanity mirror.
So it's, like, imagine, like, you know, you're comfortable being in a relationship and having a mirror up to you, but that person, their mirror is that one under fluorescent light.
Oh, my God.
I will acknowledge, as a sort of public announcement, that
is what dating a Pisces is like. Because we can be a little exacting, and we can't, like, if I have a fault in relationships, is that I sometimes don't allow people space to just be and live and grow and trust that that's going to happen without them doing harm to me. And that also has to do with the type of relationships that I've been in.
You know, I feel like that might be a sad thing too, in the sense that, like, so many of the people who've dumped me have been like, you just see everything.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's just us because we're smart and discerning. I don't
know. Sorry.
I think that's like the perfect place to pivot.
So here at Food for Thought, we always say that we are brought to you by the love and support of Rosé. And that's still true. That's still true.
Drink it if you got it.
Yes. But today, we are also brought to you by Squarespace.
Squarespace.
Well, let me tell you, if you've never listened to a podcast before, or if you've never heard of Squarespace, Squarespace is a website wherein you can make more websites. As many websites as you want. Like my website, it's imfran.com. Plain and simple, I am Fran. It's a website about Fran.
My Squarespace website is josephosmondson.com, and it's like incredible.
I have a Squarespace website too, and I love it. www.dennisnorrisii.com. I have had literary agents contact me through my website. I have even had older daddy types contact me through my website, which I'm not mad at. I have found dick on my website.
So much dick on your website.
So that is a thing that can happen too.
What about you, Tommy?
I don't have a website.
Oh my God.
I don't have a website.
Are you kidding me?
What's a website going to do for me that I can't do for myself?
You are the most successful.
You can have dick. You can get dick on a website.
Oh, where?
You can get it. It could be tall dick too. You never know.
And when you're ready to check out, go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code THOT.
THOT.
This is going to feel so good typing that into your keyboard.
The beginning of your thought life.
You can save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Yes. And honestly, it'll help us too if you use that domain.
Help us help you. Yeah. Help us help you.
That's got a thought.
Sites on sites on sites.
It's time for the meat of our conversation, the thought process, spelled THOT. And this week we're talking all about exes.
Oh, I've been waiting for this episode.
JFC, just fucking chill.
And Joe, throw it to us this week.
Yeah, so we wanted to talk about exes because, for one, they're just a fact of gay life, especially as you get older. They're the wallpaper that surrounds us, silently watching.
The ugly wallpaper.
Just hideous, mildewy. And for two, all of us in this room have dramatically different relationships with our exes and with the idea of exes in general.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Fran, for example, calls everyone he's ever kissed or DM'd for more than 2 weeks his ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, give or take, yeah.
Dennis considers all his butt toys exes after only one use.
Literally.
And
if you didn't get me
to quote Dennis, where is the lie?
And he only uses each butt toy once and then throws them away. And Tommy doesn't have any exes because once he senses things are going downhill, he simply deletes them from his phone, blocks them on email, and pretends they don't exist.
Aww. For the record, Tommy also does that when things are going well.
Drag me to hell.
Where is the lie?
And Dennis quoting Dennis, where is the lie? And me. My exes haunt me. I'm writing 2 books about them right now.
At least
and
you're
I'm
making a profit.
I am texting at least one of them as we speak. The way we consider our exes, I think, tells us a lot about how we think about the past and how we think about pain. Our exes tell us what we cut out of our life and maybe why. Are we so afraid to feel that we end up cutting ourselves off? Is the past something we can heal and recover from? What do we carry with us, and what power do we have to decide? Is it better to simply forget, or does forgetting mean we've learned nothing? Mm. Do we carry our past loves in us, whether we want to or not? So, thoughts. I want to do a little baby thought exercise.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
Your phone goes off.
Uh-oh.
You open it up.
No.
I am not answering that call because I don't answer calls from numbers I don't know. So if they're an ex of mine, I don't have their number in my phone more.
Or real Teams? Talk, it could be a bill collector.
Teams already. What's the difference between an ex and a bill collector?
Oh, my God. Put it on a t-shirt.
Teams answered my question already. You open up your phone. There's a text not just from any ex, but from that ex.
saying he's in town and he wants to get a drink. What do you respond?
I text them back because I love attention. I love attention. I love unadulterated adoration, and I love having things to write about. And I feel like going on a little thing with my ex, whether it's shitty or like whether it's great, I think is an amazing experience to have, and I will always text them back. I have terrible relationships with all my exes.
Oh,
but I don't truly
really
every,
Fran? Really?
Every single one. But yeah, I have really shitty relationships with all of my exes, and I know that says a lot of things about me. But I think that when they would feel okay to reach out to me, I'd be kind of like, oh, okay, they're opening the door back. That sounds great.
That's beautiful, that's Fran. I would say I'm an old evil bitch, and what I would do was say, not to be a stereotype, but I actually just did get a new phone, and I didn't import my contacts yet. So who is this? And then they would respond, and I'd be like, oh, and then I wouldn't respond again.
That is beautiful.
Teeth is who this embodies.
Actually, the O, actually. True. It's not the who's this, because the who is this can be just like a hurtful thing that you remember. No. It's the O.
Because I know what I'm doing. And I know how I want you to feel. And you are in my web right now, and I'm going to fucking eat you.
And you will too. I wish I were ashamed to admit this, but I'm not. My criteria is pretty simple. How big is the dick?
Oh.
How big is it?
Bye. Wow.
That's what I need to know.
Joe, I want to...
It's horrible, but it's true.
So you brought this up poking fun at me, and it's a totally fair point, but because I do call people that are not my ex-boyfriends exes.
Yeah.
And that's because I think that the word ex has, one, too much cultural weight to it, but two, is too limiting as a term. Huh. And I feel like I have people in my life that have the emotional impact, or rather the drudgery shit of any ex-boyfriend, but they're not technically an ex-boyfriend,
right? In the canon of Francabulary,
yes, it is the canon of Francabulary, and I'm wondering, how do you guys feel about the term ex? What on a language level is the word ex like? Not enough.
Well, it directly refers.
Is it too much?
It truncates ex-boyfriend, which means that like there has to be a boyfriend at the other end of that ex.
Right. But I was just going to say, Teebs, that in the same way, we talk a lot on the show about the ways in which heteronormative relationships are limiting. And so, like, the term boyfriend is limiting, and that can mean different things. I think that, you know, to be a boyfriend, we typically imagine you have a sit-down conversation, blah, 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 blah. But, like, especially in the world of gay dating, like, you can be emotionally attached to someone without having had that conversation about monogamy or boyfriends.
So right? What do we call those people? Like, I have some. Yeah. I had someone in my life who I texted every single day from wake to sleep for a year and a half.
Yeah.
We visited each other in each other's homes. We introduced each other to our friends.
Wow.
Like, what do I call that person? Am I not allowed to call them my ex? I don't know.
I think you totally are. And actually, little known fact, Fran, doing this podcast with you and hearing you talk about guys who hadn't necessarily been explicitly a boyfriend and calling them an ex is what gave me the permission to start referring to people from my past as exes who I maybe like didn't sit down and have a formal conversation with about them being a boyfriend.
Tell us about it,
but it's true. Like I've not been in very many like serious relationships. I've been in like maybe one. A couple of scenarios where I've been like, oh, maybe I'm like almost in love with this person. But
well,
it just
what was
like,
I'm curious about this. What was your, Dennis, what was your serious scenario? Or the most serious one?
So the most serious scenario was this guy that I was seeing 4 years ago. And we were seeing each other for almost maybe like eight or 9 months. Like we were seeing each other for a really long time.
Listen, in gay years, that's like 12 years.
That's a long ass time.
Gay city years?
Right. We were exclusive. I actually did meet his family. I don't really talk to my family much about my dating life. And I was like very much considering telling my family about it. And like we were both thinking about really beginning to like plan a future together. And that's actually kind of why we decided to break it off. But he and I even never called ourselves like, are we boyfriends? Like we never had a conversation about it. And I just felt like linguistically speaking, I used to feel like it was so limiting. But the thing about language is that you can queer language in so many different ways.
True.
And our relationships are queer. And the way these things operate so often are queer, whether we're talking about like LGBT
and we're trying
queer
to use
or
normative
just,
language.
Yeah. Right.
And
it's right. Not, which doesn't make
the
sense.
The things that
it's
we're doing
logical.
Are not normative. I don't know if this is you as well, Dennis, but sometimes it's an insecurity of mine, an insecurity yes. of not having enough yes. exes. And mm-hmm. so I just call everyone my exes to make them seem even less important or even more inconsequential. But the other yes. big disclaimer to this is that I love to say shitty things for attention. Mm. And like,
as a person who does things almost only for the punchline, I feel you, friend.
And the word X has such a good punch to it.
Yeah,
it does.
Especially if you land it right. And so, yeah, that's...
I will say and that. They aren't X. They could be an ex-fuck buddy, an ex-lover, an ex-anything.
Exactly.
Like, we've all had ex-bosses. Like, it doesn't just refer to the word boyfriend. True. Anyone who's had, in any way, some kind of significant impact on you and is no longer a part of your life, which, for me, like, I don't understand this whole bullshit. I want to be friends with my ex. Let's try to be like, no.
Dennis,
I don't want you at all.
You don't,
get
so,
out.
So, D, you are never friends with your exes?
No.
Hmm.
I have never been friends. I have an ex now who has a, like, 12-inch dick. We text a couple times a year.
You
he lives in California.
Such a parody of yourself, Dennis.
I don't even know
they make them in 12 inches.
I wish I were lying, and I'm not. And I will take his text messages, and we talk, and we're friendly. And there was no ugliness to the way that we ended. Most of the time, I feel like when a relationship ends, I move away from it, feeling like in some way I wasn't enough for you, I wasn't good enough for you, you were looking for something. Like, I just have this way of thinking about it and thinking about myself, which in some ways says a lot about my self-esteem in this arena of my life.
Yeah.
But that's the truth. So for me, to have exes in my life would be further damaging because I'm just going to look at you and I'm still going to have feelings for you and I'm probably still going to want you and you don't want me and like that's like very difficult
but
for
I
me to
think,
deal
though,
with.
But okay, so I'm insanely curious about this idea of being friends with exes. This is Tommy. Just because like I think a lot of it has like it depends. There are a few incubators for this ultimately. I think one of them is time. I think and again, this might just be for me, but if we break up, I can't see you for a long time. Like, I just cannot see you for a long time because I have to reformat my life without you so that I can come at you again as a different person.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
As a friend or, you know, as a person that we see at brunch every now and then or as a person whose birthday party I go to or whatever. I just need a reformatting period. The other thing is how it ends. Because plays a huge role into
huge
things.
Role.
Same.
I think, like, so I have an ex who... I think he listened to the show. He's like friends with a couple of us. And when we were dating, he wasn't a very nice person to me. And I spent a lot of time away from him. And I love him now. And I love his, I love his husband. They're married.
Ugh.
And like what happened was though that he came back to me a while later and he tried to kind of insinuate himself back in my life. And I was like, look, what I can do is I can send you writing that I've done. I can send you zines that I make. I can send you a text message every now and then. But if you think we're going to be friends, you have another thing coming to you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what he did though, and he was like, what do you need? And I was like, the entire time we were dating, you made me feel like the grievances I had in the relationship were my invention.
Wow.
I don't think that they were. I don't think I made them up. And
no.
What he did to his credit, though, is he like did like an itemized list of all the shit that he did. And he owned
Amazing.
Up to all of them.
Wow.
And he was just like, I am a different person now.
One of the things that we don't talk about often enough when we talk about losing exes is something that Dennis actually said that it reminded me of. That like the most painful loss of an ex was someone that he had started to imagine a future with. So like the most painful... thing to lose. There are two most painful things to lose when I lose somebody. It is number one, that person. It's like the actuality of that person, their body, their presence, their voice, their laughter. My most painful thing to lose is making that person laugh. Like, that's the most intimate and special thing we do.
This is something that I wrote into
Deeps.
Junk, my book, where it was like one of the saddest things is to have inside jokes with an ex
and
you both
gone.
Know them, but nobody else does.
But gone, and then it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the only thing sadder than that is to lose the future that you imagine together.
Yeah.
Because that is a construction, a narrative that you built only together, and then the other person isn't there to share it anymore. And
can
this
you
whole,
still do that? Can Fran and Joe, like, this is tease, but are you at the point where do you think you could let somebody in enough that you could begin to imagine a future with them? I just ask this question because, like, in a way, I feel like that vision, that foresight has kind of, I don't have it anymore.
No, me neither.
It's like it's something that I had with a person, and I just like I'm trying to regain it. I think it's the potential for it can still be there, but it's almost a thing that you let unlock and unload and unfurl inside of yourself that you have to then recognize is something you don't have control over.
Mm. Yeah,
and
yeah.
To lose control with somebody is like I feel like I've done it so many times that that part of me is rubbed raw.
Yeah. It's and absolutely destroyed. Yeah. I don't feel like that part of, I'm in the exact same boat as you, Teebs. And I guess, I mean, a second question on top of that question and, you know, asking for a friend here, of course, but like, how have the people who can still love at this table?
he points to Joe and Dennis.
Yeah. How did y'all learn how to love again after being destroyed?
No.
Well, I'm just saying, the thing is, okay, what I'm going to say is that, like, I want to ask another question, too, which is, like, is it harder to get broken up with by somebody you like, or is it harder to break up with somebody who likes you? Because what destroyed my ability to look forward to a future with somebody wasn't somebody breaking up with me.
Wow.
It was me breaking up with somebody else.
Same.
And having to look across the table at their face, hopeful that we were still going to be together, and for me to tell them, I don't want to be your boyfriend anymore, and your biggest crime was loving me.
I've only been broken up with once. I'm always the one who's the breaker upper, and so I have a lot of experience on the topic. But it is really fucking hard. I think it's really hard to break up with people, and I would say it's harder.
What is there an ethical way to break up with somebody? Or are you always just, it's always going to be painful, right? There's no way of mitigating pain in a situation.
No,
but
because
how do you make it how do you make the pain as uncomplicated as possible?
When you're in pain, you're irrational. Mm-hmm. So the person's reactions are rarely ever ethical. I think it's always the person who's getting broken up with I shouldn't say that it's more than that. But there's a lot of times when the person who's getting broken up with is more irrational, more unethical. And they weaponize their hurt. They weaponize their pain. And then they make you pay for it over and over again to an extent that is wrong. And I've been on the receiving end of that. And I've also been the person to do that. The one time that I got broken up with. I've fucking dug that grave as far as it would go and tried to drag him down in there with me.
Literally doing that right now.
Yeah, make him feel as bad as fucking possible. And then, like, lo and behold, 2 years later, the exact same thing happened to me in reverse. Relationship karma, y'all, it exists.
Well, what's some advice you would give a more desperate, lovelorn version of yourself?
So me right now. most of the time.
I have some. This is Teebs. I have some.
Teebs is pointing at Joe right now. Across the table.
I'm sort of pointing up. I'm pointing at an angle. First of all, I think it's you have to remind yourself that you're under the influence of something.
Ugh.
It's a drug.
Yes.
It is.
And that,
love
like,
is a drug.
And that
Grace
your
Jones.
Feelings are there, but your feelings are not facts. You know?
That is Dr. John.
You should fact check.
Speaking through you.
Thank you.
Joe is like, you're lying.
It's very important to have people to text so you don't text that person.
Oh, that's really good.
I think it's also important that you vet your responses to that person with your fucking friends.
Yes.
Because then the thoughts is here with me. Like
we have all done it.
After we met and before we started this show, I was going through a breakup and I drafted text with this group of people. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what sounds good? What should I do? Everyone had suggestions. And I sent the messages that I sent him because of this group of people. So I think it's important to it's important to have people to text and not him. I think it's important to have people to ask how to respond.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to remind yourself that you're under the influence.
And it holds you accountable to yourself. Like running these things through your friends holds you accountable to yourself and reminds you that you're on a drug and that you should
It's literally the same thing as Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like having people hold you accountable, remembering that you are rendering yourself unrecognizable to the sober version.
And like, if you don't have friends you can do this to, at us on Twitter, Food for Thought Pod.
And we will workshop your life.
Workshop your tweets and checks to your
ex. Already get a lot of tweets like that, so we won't be able to personally respond to you. Like, just
no, the other thoughts, the murder of thoughts, the larger community of thoughts. Yes,
but we might, if something really reaches us, we might personally. You never know.
Dennis, wait, what's your advice to your heartbroken self?
Bitch, get back up. If Nancy Kerrigan can go win an Olympic silver medal,
how do you
always bring it back to skating.
I really do. No, but I...
It was a silver.
Like, yeah, it was an Olympic silver medal. She should have won gold, though.
That but kills that's another conversation. Right, yeah.
But no, real talk, for me, so for when I'm really lovelorn, I have to, like, just really throw myself into, like, everything that I'm doing. Because, again, for me, a lot of the time, it feels like an attack on my self-worth. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I interpret that as, because I am sensitive and insecure. So what that means is that I have to really throw myself into the other things where I... when I'm feeling low,
where you get your shine from,
I get my shine from. So like throwing myself into my writing, sending work out to try and get it published, like trying to like actually have a good attitude and work really hard at my job. Mm-hmm. Like it's just all of the different things that I do in that way.
Reminding yourself what you give a fuck about.
Reminding myself what I give a fuck about, what my purpose here. No one ever, this is the thing. In our society, very often we move through the world as though it is our purpose to find that particular relationship, but no one actually said that it is or has to be. So for me, like, it's okay to hurt after a breakup. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to mourn for myself or mourn for the person and mourn for the moments or mourn for the intimacy
and mourn for the future. Yeah,
I have wonderful people in my life, so I can be grateful for that and find solace in the things that make me me.
But you as a person have attracted all of these other people.
Yeah,
maybe not necessarily that person, but like that you still have attracted good things in your life, and to remember that just because the thing was real doesn't mean it's going to be forever, and doesn't mean you are a bad person because it didn't work out.
Fran, baby,
my advice for myself would be to feel it. Like, don't numb yourself too much. Like, really feel it. Mm-hmm. Turn that into art. Mm-hmm. Don't show anyone that art for like 5 or 6 years. Because it's not going to be good art at all. Like, it's going to be really bad. Side note, the hurt that you feel right now, like the agony that you feel right now, will be like such a blip in just 5 years.
Fuck yes.
Maybe 3.
Yeah.
Maybe even 2. I can't say one.
Time is like such a good equalizer.
But like thinking about your life from a bird's eye view has been really healing for me. For not just breakups, but for like things that you go through that are really hard. If I'm able to like, you know.
Any kind of rejection.
Yeah. If I'm able to float above my head like 2,000 feet and look down and be like, oh, this isn't going to hurt in 5 years. Mm-hmm. If you think about that, it doesn't necessarily make the hurt go away, but it contextualizes it in a way
you
that
get some perspective.
That I think is helpful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think the last thing is like, I would kind of like, you know, I would want to give like a tough love kind of talk. I'd be like, why are you letting men break you? You should be the only one that can break you. Like, I'll be proud of you when you break you. I don't want men to break you.
Ooh.
Hello, my socially active gentle thoughts. Did you all know that if you did not get enough of this trash-talking conversation, first of all, you're filthy.
Come on.
You're disgusting.
And we love you.
Oh, my God. If you did not get enough in the thought process in our main discussion of the podcast, you can join us and all of our listeners on Twitter for the rest of the conversation. Now, each week, we will be pinning a question at the top of our profile, and all y'all will be able to participate in the conversation. Ooh. So, like, if you didn't get enough, if you got a burning question, if you have other listeners to talk to, I will tell you, all of our Twitter listeners love to talk.
Yes,
they do. Of our Twitter listeners are finding each other in each other's mentions, and now we are hosting that space. Come have a seat at a table. Find us at Food for Thought Pod. That's food, the number 4, and thought spelled
THOT
Pod on Twitter. So yeah, get at us.
I've got that feeling like I'm full, but I could fit one more thing inside of me. Dennis knows how I feel. And to give us our dessert today, it is Dennis.
Well, so y'all know I'm the little figure skating freak, and we're going to talk about Adam Rippon because the Olympics have happened, and this is where we are. I'm actually really, really excited to talk about him. Also, I met him 2 years ago at my gala. Hi, Adam.
Oh,
hope you're well.
My God.
Come on the show.
He's a sweetheart. Come on our show.
Literally,
I know
though.
You did the show with Jeff Masters, so do ours.
I didn't know that.
Did he? That happened.
What?
That happened.
Oh God,
so you need
pissed.
To come on ours because
Jeff.
I am a figure skater and
Fuck
we can chat.
You.
So, Adam Rippon. He has been obviously huge in the Twitterverse and the media in general because
in
of the
ass.
Olympics. And in the ass. There is speculation that he skates with butt pads.
And he's put those to rest.
That's just real.
He has put the, and I will admit that when that conversation first started happening, I thought it might be because they are positioned exactly where they should be for when he falls on his quad lutz.
Mm-hmm. But of course, Dennis.
But
jargon.
But I have been convinced that he is in fact not competing in butt pads. But basically, we have been all about Adam Rippon because he's the first openly, publicly gay athlete to qualify for the Winter Olympics.
Like, extremely gay. Like, excruciatingly gay.
Let's be clear.
Excruciating is the word for it.
He's certainly not the first gay athlete at the Winter Olympics. I mean, neither was Johnny Weir, but, like, we don't have to look very far in the past to know.
Elton John at Disneyland. Like, it was just...
And love the candelabra. Love them. But, like, he's not the first one to actually be there, but he's the first one to be publicly out before he qualifies, and that is a huge moment.
Right, because everyone knew Johnny Weir was Johnny Queer, but nobody's, like,
he wasn't saying it as well.
But can I say that this is something that's very true of the Olympics? The Olympics are very conservative, politically, incredibly. And I think that has to be the context in which we have this conversation. That and the context of the butt plug in chief is what this political moment is happening right now. Because remember, I think I want to put this show in the context of the 1968 Black Pride, Black Power salute in the Mexico City Olympics, and it was Tommy Smith and John Carlos, and there was a white man from Austria who was also on the podium, and they all suffered horrible consequences. They were essentially ostracized. Australia, you're right, Australia, almost kicked out of the Olympics, essentially ostracized, like take a lot of the
accolades or
like financial gain that could have come to them as Olympic medalists were taken away, and it was for being political. It's like the Olympics are supposed to be apolitical, right?
But
nothing is apolitical, right?
They can't be.
Right. But that's, I think, the context, the reason why there
are sports in general, right? That's the whole movement we're having right now with, like, Take a Knee or any of
that. Exactly.
It's supposed to be like, oh, well, this is just fun and game.
Exactly. Right. Like, we want to be able to come and watch the sports ball game without feeling all, like, polarized and, like, we have to take a stance on things. But, of course, like, these are bodies doing labor. They exist in the capitalist system. They are going to get money or not get money, right? Like, there's this whole larger framework. So it actually is the thing that makes me so happy about Adam Rippon is that it actually was a huge risk for him.
Yeah.
To be not just out, but then out in a way that, like, we don't have a lot of public figures who are that flamboyant.
Yeah. And calling out politicians, like, actively calling out Mike Pence, who was at the delegation for the Olympics, and calling him out for some of his policies and things that he supported, like supporting gay conversion therapy and saying that we should be funding it. Like, he's been incredibly outspoken. And this is also a thing that in figure skating, like, kind of a little known fact because it's a really gay sport, but figure skating is actually a pretty conservative realm as well. And this is a sport where you are judged. And so people get to understand who you are, understand everything about how you present yourself, and they judge you on everything from your perceived social class, as some of us may have learned from the film I, Tonya, to the merit of what you do on the ice, to how you present yourself, to what you say. Like, you get judged, you get marked, and that can determine your career. Yeah. There's a reason why Johnny Weir skated into Olympic Games and was not publicly out of the closet.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, that's a real thing. And so what he's doing is extraordinary.
It's like the thing where when you're queer or when you're a person of color, you have to be 10 times better at the thing you do in order just to be on the same playing field, right?
Because objectivity is an illusion.
Yeah. Word. And I just love, he just is funny and lighthearted. He said on NBC, on national television, after his thing, I just want a Xanax and a quick drink. He said he was going to ask the judges for like a quick,
And honestly, he's a grown-ass man. Like, what?
But, like, the ability to be that flamboyant and that, like, just yourself in the public eye, I think is really quite remarkable.
Me too.
Yeah. There's also, like, I put in the doc, so earlier this season, at one of the major international competitions called Skate America in December, he was doing his long program, he attempted his quad lutz, he fell, and in his fall, which was kind of a violent fall, he dislocated his shoulder, which is easily dislocated because he had a major shoulder dislocation injury, like, earlier in the year. And he gets up and he skates in a circle for a minute, shimmies his shoulder back into place in like 3 seconds, and then goes on to deliver a beautiful, flawless performance and won the silver medal. And afterwards, he won the silver medal. And afterwards, he was interviewed by I think it was Andrea Joyce, but I'm not sure. But anyway, he was interviewed and he said, listen, he was like, I was like, I want my check. Yes. I want my money. I'm going to finish this program and I'm going to be great. But and like, he was.
But it's
badass. Now,
anybody who thinks faggots is soft.
That's exactly right. Right.
Oh,
right.
My God,
right. So like good. Anybody.
It's the ability to be like in the world's most excruciating pain and then get yourself together, do the best job you ever did in your life, and then throw glitter in the air and prance through it. Like, oh it's gosh. Just the ability to be all of literally it. Get so you, get Adam you Ripon, a you man
are,
who could do both.
We are here for you
this week.
We love you.
Delicious.
This episode of Food for Thought is made possible by the generous, unequivocal support of Rosé and our partnership with Into, an online magazine for queer news and culture. Head to IntoMore.com each week for a brand spanking new love note from your all-time favorite hoes. Our engineer is Alex Mead Fox at Spaceman Sound Studios, and our producer is the perennial hydrangea of our heart, Alexandra De Palma.
Oh my God.
I'm Tommy Teebs Pico. You can find me at HeyTeebs on all relevant social media.
I'm Fran. You can find me at Fran Squish Co. on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and also Venmo. Never
I'm
not.
Joseph Osmondson. You can find me at www.josephosmondson.com.
And I am Dennis Norris II, and I have a chapbook out, and you can find that at www.awst-press.com or on Twitter at The Earl Den Den.
Yes. You can listen to Food for Thought on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download golden audio goodness. Subscribe, rate, and review us 5 stars on iTunes to make sure our DMs stay thick with 2 C's.
Yes,
find us on Twitter and Facebook as Food for Thought Pod and on Instagram as Gay Sluts Who Read. Sign up for our newsletter for episode insights, reading lists, and extra delectable content at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. And finally, send your questions, thoughts, concerns, and dick picks to thoughts at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. As always, that's food, the number 4, and thought spelled how?
T-H-O-T. Bye.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.